All right. Well, welcome everybody to the GC On Demand podcast. My name is Eric Wright. I am at Disco Posse on Twitter. I am Disco Posse in the Green Circle community. And once again, you know, we've got so many great voices in the community, in technology, and I'm very pleased to have someone on the podcast today, described very nicely as someone who strives to simplify the technically complex and advocate thinking outside the box. You've probably seen his writing and his voice on many things. He's blogged under many different monikers, but luckily he's easy to find now because you can find him at vaughnstewart.com. He's an author, contributing author, a community champion, and a great voice for the community and for technology. With that, I want to welcome Vaughn Stewart.
Eric, I couldn't be happier to be on the podcast. It's nice to talk again. It's been a couple of months.
Yeah, it's one of these things that everybody gets into such emotion, especially as, you know, I call it conference season, although conference season used to be, you know, like television seasons used to run for 6 months and then you would just get reruns for the rest of the year. But now I think conference season is like on demand. It's continuously going. So it's a little bit harder to kind of reconnect with folks along the way.
Yeah. Supporting conferences, I think, is a full-time job. From even just the folks that have to deliver the content, let alone those who are the planners and take care of all the logistics. It's conferences like the new like sub element within the IT industry.
Yeah, you never realize what goes into it until you start to go like a, you know. And I remembered, you know, early opportunities to see you speak, you know, back in the day, they say, you know, saw you on some VMworld panels. I remember getting up and asking a question, and it was like, and then like a day later, sort of seeing you on the street. And it's that weird thing of, you know, I always talk it like, you know, like the rock star movie moment where you're like, you're the guy in the audience and you're singing along with it. And then someone hands you the microphone. So it's really cool to have an opportunity to kind of be among your peer group and share and help to spread your voice. You know, and talking about voice, one of the things we talked a little bit before, and I like to describe what you do as being a great voice for community and for technology. And you've worked in the vendor space for a while. And what's neat about it is I like people that are great, strong voices and being able to advocate and evangelize and do this, but also, you know, beautifully represent your vendor company that supports you, but yet stay true to the value of technology and where the industry is going. Like how did you get started? Let's talk about you in the industry and kind of how did you end up where you're at today?
Sure. So for your listeners who maybe aren't aware of just a bit of background. So I'm at Pure Storage. I'm a vice president and enterprise architect, which means I help lead the enterprise SEs in terms of engaging some of our largest customers and speaking not just through our product portfolio, but helping advise them in terms of what's possible when you combine our products with their business models or other technologies. And that can be, you know, a very technical conversation, a very nuanced, but probably more important, a very much of a trusted advisor and guidance-focused role. Prior to that, I spent 13 years in change at NetApp and in various roles. The early years were in the field. The latter half of the years, I had a role, particularly the last half, of helping to influence the direction of what NetApp brought to market with VMware integrations, and that expanded to be some guidance on the cloud strategy. I'd say I had huge success with what I did with in the VMware space, and probably wasn't as effective with shaping their cloud model, and that probably led to me eventually deciding to move on. But I think I've had the privilege with both my time at Pure Storage and at NetApp, I've had the luxury of being able to work behind technologies that during their moments that I was there, they didn't just deliver on their promise, they exceeded what they could bring to market. And I think from a technologist, anyone who's ever worked in the market, you realize there's always going to be gaps between your product and customers' expectations or what your product can do versus, say, an alternative option or a competitive option. And I find great reward in just knowing that your product is making the bulk of your customers ecstatic. It's very rewarding. Let me put it in a different way. I loathe when you have to tap dance and spin on a product that's been overpromised and is underdelivering.
Amen to that. Yeah, yeah. I use a phrase that I love: trusted advisor. Like that's a huge part of, you know, reputation. Yeah, they always say like your reputation precedes you, and it does. And it also stays behind when you walk out of a meeting, when you walk out of a conference or a customer, you know, opportunity. It's, yeah, being a trusted advisor is part of the voice. How do you create trust, you know, as a technologist and as a voice of a vendor? What are some kind of things that you look for to help to not just close the deal, but truthfully create a trust situation and help to build relationships?
So that's a great point. And so kind of off the top of my head here, I think there's kind of three pillars, and if this fragments from 3 into 12, let me know. I think first and foremost, I think customers have an affinity for genuine conversations, and that's hard, right? You work for a vendor and you get trained on your product and you get this internal hype and you're told to be excited and you're excited when you take it to a customer. And I think you need to realize if you work for a vendor, the customer sees excited vendors all day long. And you walk in the door, unless you have an established relationship with a customer where you've already built that trust, you're no different than any other vendor. And so I think, you know, share your product and share your passion, but, you know, do so in a way that's, I think, realistic to understand what the customer's needs are. Do so in a way that doesn't trash your competitors. You know, focus on what you do well. Your customer will tell you, you know, what they do or don't like about the competition. You don't need to, you know, to go in there and appear that you're just looking to sell your product. You know, go in with a focus that you're trying to help your customer solve their problem. And the customer is going to thank you whether they purchase your product or not if they deem that you're in it for their interests. So that would be one, which is, you know, to like, you know, balance your enthusiasm with you know, a focus on the customer and the customer's goals. I think second, if you're an infrastructure player, understand that usually, and that's the space that I focus on, right? So this may not apply to all vendors. If you're in the infrastructure space, understand that your product, for all the great capabilities it provides, usually can't do that and can't deliver anything in a vacuum. And that's the reality that the customer tend to work with within. So what I would advise is you know, continually develop your skill set above and around your product, so that you are in the best prepared for the situation when you meet a customer to talk about how your product does work in advancing the ball or moving the needle, whatever term you want to use. You know, but you want to have impact with whatever the customer's goals are, and you want to be able to speak to how your product can work there. So expand your knowledge base, and if it's not you, then grab somebody within your organization who can help, you know, the customer combine your technology with another and understand what the results are. I think third, you know, in that same vein, is if you're educated yourself, you should be able to understand where your product works really well and go seek those opportunities. And when you have questions whether your product will work, you may want to reconsider how aggressive you push with that customer or even bow out of their requests. There is nothing worse to your desire to build a trusted relationship status than, you know, selling a square peg when the customer really needed a round hole. That's the right analogy, but, you know, selling a screwdriver when the customer needed a socket wrench is, yeah, maybe, yeah, a better analogy there. That's it. I mean, some of the greatest praise I've ever had for customers is followed, you know, just a long run of success. And you can really do a lot of damage when, you know, you didn't dot your I's and cross your T's in order to help them have success.
Yeah, success isn't getting it into a data center. Success is keeping it in a data center and having it continue to be used, just like anything. I always tell people, with whatever solution they're looking for, you've got to know why any vendor solution or whatever it is, you've got to know why it is not appropriate as much as why it's appropriate. And like you said, it's the old, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail kind of of thing. People say like, oh, well, our thing can do everything. I've been told that. My sales VP made sure that I know that it can do everything. You're like, well, let's just hold tight there before you go and overpromise, and that definitely carves into trust.
Yeah, and let's be clear. We're not these comments by no means are meant to be construed as negative on the industries that we work within. The reality is when you work as an innovative industry as being an IT vendor, you can get overwhelmed with the wow factor that your products and everything else that's occurring in the industry bring to bear, and it's really easy to get caught up in that wow factor and want to then interface with the customer and just share your enthusiasm and your excitement. And what you have to realize is that most of our customers aren't in the IT industry. They want the results of your technology.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, they can't always connect the dots between the details of the elements that comprise your technology with business results.
And another thing that what I find builds trust, and you touched on it a bunch there, is the idea that you're not there to trash your competitors. Everybody's, no matter what it is, what business you're in, our space happens to be IT vendors. But yeah, and I remember Chris Wall is a friend, and he's a great, similar mindset of like, hey, let's just answer customer business challenges. Like, let's just solve their problems. And hopefully our technology works in that. And he was asked at Tech Field Day, someone said, well, how does this compare to another vendor that's kind of in the same space? And he gave the greatest answer, which was, if they were here, you should probably ask them, and I'd encourage you to ask them. Like, I don't know them, nor could I represent their stuff. And that was really cool. It was very honest, because we were often walked into that conversation, especially when you're in like sales, right? People say like, well, how are you different than a competitive vendor? And a salesperson is of course inclined to say, well, they're awful. Here's why they're awful. But you've got a very different voice because you're so outward, you're technical, and we want to be representative of customer challenges, not of necessarily vendor products, right?
Well, I think if you're a technologist and you listen to this podcast, right? I think the recommendation that I would give is be deductive in the way that you communicate to your customers versus inductive. And what I mean by that is, I think if you have a technical role, right, a common term in the industry, systems engineer or whatever the title may or may not be, may vary from vendor to vendor. But if your role is supporting the customer engagement and you have a technical aspect, definitely keep your chops sharp and stay up to date. But when you engage with the customer, I find that you can help the customer if you give them the headline first, followed by details. And the longer the conversation goes, the greater into the details that you go. Where I watch some technologists is they open up with details and details and details and details, and you can see the customer going like, wow, okay, neat, that's great. But they're struggling on how does it get put together? And you'll see this actually bubble up in the terms of the customer saying, so that allows me to have this, right? The customer's trying to piece it together.
Yeah.
And I think your job as representing the vendors to give them, hey, we're going to help you move the needle from X to Y, and it's powered by this technology. And the customer will say, well, that's interesting, but tell me more, right? And that's them opening the door for you then to give the details. I just think it's an easier flow. It's an easier way to grasp. And realize that, if customers meet with lots of vendors and they get lots of data points, they can only remember a few key things from each vendor, and so at any given engagement, right? And so you want to make sure that you nail your big data points and that those stick. And this isn't meant to say that you don't share the nuances and the details. The more nuanced the conversation, the smaller the audience that's going to retain that detail is likely to be.
Yeah, it's if we take it outside to a, if you were a you're thinking about running, and you go to someone and say, like, I'm thinking about running, and they'll say, oh, would you like to, you know, run a 5K, a 10K, a marathon? If that's the right answer, let's dive into what your actual requirements are. But yeah, like you said, technologists would say, oh, well, the important thing when you're thinking, when you're doing a marathon, is like your cadence is very important. You know, whatever your cadence is right now, it's probably wrong. And like they immediately just dive into all the stuff, and it's just, oh my God, stop, stop, stop.
Yeah, can you run up and down the hallway a couple of times? I want to analyze your stride.
So one of the things that we always see now is the challenge of being original. You know, like everybody's got, you know, no one wants to be the ugly baby. No one wants to have an ugly baby, you know, in their technology and their solution, whatever. But we all have a lot of really beautiful babies out here. And there's, how do you differentiate things, you know, and, you know, talk about maybe how your customers, like, I find it challenging when you talk to people and they say, like, I've got too much choice now. It becomes more difficult to architect a solution when there's, you get this sort of analysis paralysis of too many technology offerings. How do you think customers can get better and at, you know, learning what's out there, and how can we as technologists be better at showing them the door a bit?
Yeah, you know, it's that's a really good question. The reality in any industry is when a particular vendor or product takes a market lead, their message tends to get cannibalized by inferior or subsequent products. And sometimes I don't know how customers make decisions, to be honest with you. And that's why I think it's so critical to have effective communication and to become a trusted advisor, right? If you're an incumbent vendor, right, it's always easy, right? Your message to customers is you know, hey, maybe we're not innovating, but we're going to be there. We've got a long history and a long relationship, and customers will buy into that. And conversely, when you are a growing company, right, an upstart like Pure Storage is, you know, that's probably our number one hurdle is customers choosing to do nothing and choosing to wait for their incumbent vendor to deliver for them. And this is where I think it's critical, if you are a technologist, to make sure that, you know, after you've identified what the customer's goals are and how your technology is a piece to that solution and advances the total solution or the goal of the solution, is then to substantiate with the technology details that differentiate. And again, you're better off, you know, finding, pursuing five deals out of 10 where you're going to have high success, because then you can have really easy repeat and build on your success, versus pursuing 10 out of 10 where if one goes sideways, you know, it's going to suck all your time and all your effort to support that one fire drill. So my guidance on that, and again, I'm getting long-winded on all of this, is, you know, the market's going to sound like a bunch of parrots. That's what success begets. And you know, as great as your technology is, you've got to, as technologists, be clear, concise, and it also doesn't hurt if you have fantastic marketing. You know, the good marketing companies will continue to push the envelope. The ones that come to market with the new messages first probably have something going on with their technology. That doesn't mean that some great technologies don't die because of poor marketing, but the reality is, today's market, you've got to have sales execution, product, and marketing.
Yeah, and technology doesn't define the success of a company too, right? So a great tech, we've seen it over and over again. Great technologies that the company that's wrapped around them just falters because they can't. The operating a business is different, and that includes marketing, sales, you know, executive leadership, all these different pieces, right? And you know, having come out of a big company like NetApp and seeing its growth over the years, people were always like, oh, yeah, look at NetApp. They're this giant dinosaur. But guess what? You know, they're still going, and they're going to reinvent themselves in interesting ways. You know, Pure Storage, so, you know, I'm excited by seeing how Pure Storage has grown as a company as much as the technology. And that's been interesting to watch. Like, how was it for you to be a part of, you know, probably you were like employee, small number, you know, and now you've probably grown quite a bit since then.
Yeah, so just to kind of set the expectation, right? I joined NetApp and there was roughly 900 employees, and we grew up to 15,000.
Wow.
And they've declined, since then, and since my departure. No correlation, mind you, but and joined Pure, sub 200 employees, and now in excess of 1,700 employees, and that's just in the span of basically 30 months. What I try to share with a lot of folks at Pure while we go through this hyper growth phase is there's going to be different phases of the company. We are going to continually shift, and we're going to shift at a pace faster than our predecessors, right? I got to go through the different phases with NetApp, and NetApp was always, recognized as a huge success story
Yeah.
in terms of the rate of growth within the IT industry. And we are rapidly eclipsing that at Pure. And so it compresses time. If you think about the rate at which we hire employees, you basically have to look at your job today and say, how am I going to work myself out of this job? Because my job is going to require two or three people in 12 months' time. And so you've got to balance between technical execution and moving fast without burdening yourself and building some structure that isn't not going to scale. So case in point here, and I'm going to pivot here a bit, and not to make it too vendor pitchy, but I would be regressive if I didn't mention it, right? So this week we had our first ever user conference, Accelerate, up in San Francisco, and realize Pure's 5 years old, and we just had our first user conference. We had 1,500 attendees, with senior executives, on stage from Arista and Cisco, VMware and Google, and numerous entrepreneurs that spanned, the sports, gaming, and entertainment industries, a number of customers that were just, sharing their case studies, I think in excess of 40, right? And I was blown away. And just, NetApp's first user conference, took a much longer time to get here. And this is not meant to be a negative piece, so, maybe we want to strike that from this recording, but to have that size conference at your 5 year mark, literally my jaw was on the ground. I was really afraid that we weren't going to have the turnout, that we weren't big enough.
Yeah.
Even for all the great success that we're having, and as much as our customers absolutely, vote that they love us, and and our net promoter scores, it's just, honestly, kudos to the events team and the marketing team at Pure. It is just fantastic. And so the second element, I'm gonna continue on this Accelerate theme. So two things of note, and one is we launched a bunch of products, which we can talk about if you'd like. But before I talk about that, it was really interesting to watch where the attendees invested their time. Right, obviously the keynotes and the hearing the perspective of the vendors or the case studies of the customers always draw a crowd, but there was a significant investment in terms of bodies standing around booths at the new technology vendors,
Yeah.
and so VM Turbo was one of the premier level sponsors, right? It was probably the busiest booth there, right? You just saw this appetite for customers to wanna consider new technology, in addition to VM Turbo, right? The Rubrik and the Cohesity booths were really active. And again, I'm just, I don't have badge scan counts by any means, but just in walking the show floor, there was always a crowd around the next generation vendor booths.
It's really an exciting time to be amongst it. Like it's, we always fear that there's going to be a financial bubble, that there's going to be a real estate bubble, and we talk about the tech bubble. And I feel like it's different because, the tech, the 2000, like the dot-com era bubble was just because the consumers weren't there to take it in and to maintain that. Of course, the economy went, it was horrific, the way that the turn went in the general economy, and that obviously affected that. But now I find like this is such a huge opportunity for folks to come in, and lots of startups are coming in. Like you said, there, you see a new startup at a show, and you just being like, oh, well, they'll be on, you know, Reject Row next year, and then they'll be gone. And like, no, no, they're actually going to be platinum next year, because it's a huge boom for new opportunities and new technologies and new ways to consume, you know, technology.
It's cool. So this is funny. So you and I were talking about this kind of prior to the podcast, not in this direct fashion, but we were kind of on an offshoot. You know, I listen, you know, like all of us, right? I'm sure we listen to the industry podcasts and whatnot, and you know, a topic that's kind of recurring of late is this, you know, the tech bubble, and this crash, and the startups that won't make it, and I don't find any value in the doom and gloom conversation. And maybe it's because, you know, these positions are shared by folks who work for large incumbents, right? And that's, you know, what you hope happens, or you hope that disruption doesn't come in and eat your business model. The reality is this disruption is always here. IT, particularly infrastructure technology, is a landscape of innovate or die. And I think there's this exciting time in the market. Yeah, maybe financing's tough. Yeah, not every vendor makes it, but what an exciting time in the overall market. And if you look at kind of my theory of what's occurring right now, what you're seeing in terms of products that are in the market right now or just on the cusp of coming to market, is this is kind of the post-VMware boom. And what I mean by that is VMware was such a massive disruption that it changed the engineering investments, the go-to-market plans for an entire industry, and they really, the impact was really felt from 2007, say, through 2011. That was probably where it was the most disruptive, right? Regardless of what your company was going to do, they needed to make sure that they could participate in this changing IT landscape. They wanted to see if they could use it as an opportunity to leverage, to gain share, and you know, on that topic, that's something that we had tremendous success back at my previous employer. You know, was one of those who came out on top with that opportunity in terms of growing share relative to, you know, before and after the boom. But as the VMware moved from a disruptive technology to a market leader, and you know, go to market opportunities and joint innovative opportunities really kind of tapered down a bit, as well as did the integration conversations, and I mean technical integrations, not just certified, you know, validations. You know, it's allowed the rest of the IT industry and ecosystem to start to get back to investing in their visions and their directions, or maybe increasing the investments in those spaces is a better way to phrase it.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing come to market right now is the boom of just fantastic technologies. And they work with the VMware ecosystem, and a lot of them exceed and go and support broader sets of technologies. But what a great time to be in IT. I mean, right, I'm in the flash space, right? The flash market's obviously booming, and I'm sure someone will argue with this, but you know, disk is absolutely on its way out. You know, the performance storage market has been eclipsed with flash, and the gating factor on that was price. You know, there's a lot of ways that you can look at new storage opportunities today. You know, host side caching. You know, filter level drivers in the hypervisor that talk to some flash tier. You know, hybrid storage. You know, hyperconverged. Look, you know, a lot of that innovation was spurned out of disk storage just being unbearable.
Yeah.
And what prevented people from going to flash was cost. And now cost is been neutralized. And now customers are having to, you know, evaluate flash platforms based on different values. But pivoting from storage, right, if you look at the things that are happening in terms of network fabrics, the level of intelligence, right, so, you know, Brocade with, you know, their whole, like, peer zoning element, right, where storage devices are put into the fabric as principals and hosts are peers, and peers can see the principal but can't see one another, and as you zone storage from the array, and usually that zoning or LUN masking, I should say, LUN masking, which is when you are assigning storage devices to hosts from an array and usually through some plugin, so you may be doing it natively just inside, say, VMware.
Yep.
It actually builds the zoning or the traffic rules within the fiber channel fabric. I mean, you know, we're seeing technologies like this where you know, you're getting this pluggable, you know, machine learning based infrastructure technologies kind of come to bear, and it's amazing. And when I pivot over to like the VM Turbo and the notion of how do I optimize this environment based on service levels and policies, and how do the policies learn and adapt based not only on hardware resources but the requests made on these resources? It's just, yeah, it's fantastic technology, and unfortunately, you know, for the customer, there's so many choices out there right now. I don't know how they clearly identify what's innovation and what's not, but that's our job to figure out.
Yeah, the idea that the API, I remember, like, for years, you know, I've kind of pitched the idea that everybody I would talk to would say, like, well, do you have an externally exposed RESTful API so that I can consume your service? And I didn't ask it because I wanted to, you know, curl some bizarro URL and render some commands, you know, when I'm probably going to do it through their interface. But what I wanted to know was interoperability down the road. And that's become the de facto standard, right? Like that idea of like zoning, everything's automated. It's because it's loosely coupled, API driven. That's the new normal, right? And if you don't have that capability, all of a sudden it's making sense to people like, okay, now I get why APIs are important, because it's not that you as a customer are going to be consuming it that way, but the other products you use are going to consume it that way. And if it doesn't have that, then it's, you know, tightly coupled and rigid, terrifying, you know, infrastructure to have in place when you know that it's just not upgrade friendly at all.
Right, right.
So one of the things I want to ask you, Vaughn, is, you know, you've covered a lot and you've always been, you know, kind of looked ahead. And I love that ability, that, you know, saying, you know, flash forward. I'm looking ahead and I see the future, you know, and everybody's kind of like had to pick the thing that they knew that they said, this is it, you know, I believe. And it's tough. Sometimes you don't have believers early on. You know, how do you look for what's next? What's the, like, what resources do you go to? Is a lot of it anecdotal? How do you kind of know what's coming?
I appreciate the compliment. I don't know how to make this a pragmatic term. Sometimes I get to my conclusions and then struggle with explaining how I got there. But I think it's likely the greatest investment that anyone can make in trying to be better on their insight is to look at any new technology and apply a filter of how much of an advancement or gain is this technology likely to provide for me? Because if it's incremental, if it's 10%, 20%, 30%, 50%, it's probably not worth the investment. And I know some folks are going to argue with that. My point to this is the technologies that move the needle, you know, make a 10x improvement in something. If you're trying to pitch something to a venture capitalist in the Valley, no one wants to invest in incremental gains. Those products tend to have short lives. They want customers that are going to make tenfold leaps in what's possible. So from that perspective, is apply a healthy skeptical filter to the technology that you look at. If you want to take it to the next level, I would highly, highly advocate that you participate in investor analyst conferences, and that gives you an insight to where the money is being invested, and gives you foresight to what's likely either, you know, emerging or soon to be coming to market from the venture capital space. And even within the investor analyst communities, right, you can get a sense for who's, you know, who's delivering, even though they may be small in size, versus who's struggling. Or even reach out to some of the venture capitalists directly themselves. I know Greylock, for example, Greylock Partners, has a service where they allow individuals and organizations to come to their facilities, and you meet a number of their investments and you get a sense for what's maybe not ready for prime time, but allows you to begin to plan for maybe what's possible. I think that's a great way to, in a very pragmatic way, those last two points of getting some insight in which way that the industry's going. I think
if you're going to look at anyone, look at the portfolio of the people that have succeeded thus far, and odds are, they're the ones that you want to help you through that next portion of the visibility into the next generation.
Yeah, and so with that, to kind of put in apologies in advance here, because I want to pivot this back, but to kind of put that into perspective. So if you look at like the products that we announced at Accelerate this week, right? So we did a bunch of product launches, and highlighting all of it was FlashBlade, which was a cloud scale all flash data platform for tier two storage, right? This is taking flash and into an area that I've been forecasting this direction, for a couple of years, which is this is taking flash into the 7200 RPM SATA, drive market, and doing it in a way that doesn't include SSDs, right? There's no SSDs. It's a blade chassis architecture. Each blade has NVRAM and DRAM and CPUs and NAND flash chips directly on it, and it's coupled together with a 40 gig SDN network fabric for cross blade communications, and translates incoming requests to the from host to the backend storage. But also, it involves a distributed operating system that we call the Elasticity OS. I mean, this product is going to allow new opportunities in the NAS space. And NAS, just to set the table for you, for folks, NAS and object, but NAS either kind of comes in two flavors. There's like home directories, which everyone has.
Yeah.
And we're not targeting that spot first. And then there's engineering data sets. And in that engineering data set, the jobs are measured by wall clock time, right? Whether you're doing CPU simulation, you're doing CAD/CAM product engineering development, or you're doing bioengineering and research, how many iterations can you run, in a given day directly translates to the time for you to be able to innovate, find a cure, bring a product to market, and the fact that in four rack units, a customer can have 1.6 petabytes of usable storage at a price point that's less than $1 a gigabyte, consumes less power than a hair dryer, and can just be connected to additional 4U flash blades to scale out. It's game changing. And in time we'll move into the file share space and maybe even data at rest storage. And in that space where you say, well, I don't need that performance. The density from a data center, the green aspect from data center efficiencies, the density, the low power draw, that's huge value, huge, huge, huge. That's what I would call, a game-changing technology. And of course, let's see how it does in market, and the future will write the success, whether regardless of how well or how excited we are about the product. But show me something else like this that's in the industry. There's nothing there, and it solves real problems, right? We had customers on stage at Accelerate talk about their average development lifecycle for a product is 5 years, and everything's sunk in cost until you come to market. And they said with FlashBlade, they can reduce that time by a year to 2 years. Think about what that means, right? And again, we're in IT. But we're not in IT for IT's sake. We're in IT to power the business that our employees are in.
Technology for technology's sake is not the right technology, right?
Right. So it's again, we kind of talked about this 10 minutes ago. It's an exciting time to be in IT. It really is.
It's and it's good, and congratulations to you and the team and everybody on delivering both, a great conference in general, looked like it got great reception, and as well, obviously, a huge, huge number of product releases and seeing that execution. It's exciting to watch it from the outside and get to watch people in the market, take it in, and like you said, we'll see. The beauty part is In a few months, we can, we can talk again. I'm sure there'll be much more releases, and it'll be fun to go back and kind of, check the bar and see where we measured along the way.
Yeah, and I thank you for allowing me to kind of touch base on Accelerate FlashBlade. I mean, by no means is this meant to be a commercial. I mean, folks know how to get to purestorage.com or my blog for more info. It's not
So the
not tuning in here for a pitch.
That's all right. We'll sneak in that there's a gift if you hear the phrase that pays, then so one thing before we close up, I always love to ask people, about resources, learning resources and whatnot, and the most common thing I ask, like what's the book on Vaughn's shelf that's the must read book? What would you recommend to people, in your role or just technologists in general?
I have three books right in front of me that are my current reads, and
Perfect.
this may not be what you're asking for. I consume a ton of information through various formats, a lot of books, a lot of audiobooks. If it's things that I need to know, I tend to read. If it's things that tend to entertain me, I tend to listen. But so in front of me are three books. The first one is Star Wars: The Adventures of Luke Skywalker,
Nice.
which is something that I'm reading with the family. The second is a Choose Your Own Misery book, kind of like the spin-off of the old Choose Your Own Adventure books that we had as a kid, called The Office Adventure, that it is talking about the it puts you in the position of endless choices with some hilarious but cringing realities. But the one that on a serious note that's in front of me, it's actually in my hand right now, that I find a tremendous amount of value in is from the Harvard Business Review's 10 Must Reads collection, and it's called On Managing Yourself. And
Yeah,
so it's a
I've
collection
heard
of ACR articles that I think, again, if you're a technologist, you may think, oh, that's business stuff, I'm not interested in this. And I would really advocate, I think it's like a $6 Kindle download if you wanted an electronic version. It's very affordable. But it's a collection of just great articles on forward thinking, right? And applying that thinking into how you handle yourself.
It's those are the greatest ones I've found have advanced my technology career more than anything was business books, and so I'm 100% with you on that. And again, yeah, that title is, it sounds familiar too, as like, again, sort of those top reads from a few folks that I've talked to, and the fun stuff is there too. I always tell people that they're like, what's your favorite, books? I'm like, I cram in, good old fashioned fiction, and nonfiction, crime serials, other things. Like you've got a, it's neat to hear that. That could be the most fun set of books that I've had so far from folks. I know Chris Wall had mentioned another, like sort of a sci-fi, book, and he's also a huge consumer of information. So it's neat
Oh,
to
yeah.
see that, it's not just like, well, feel free to read, the company, the book that was written by my company.
Yeah. I mean, if the readers are interested in any recommendations, I mean, I don't think any book comes to mind. Anything that I read in the last year comes to mind as being more rewarding than maybe The Martian by Andy Weir. That was
Ah,
fantastic.
yes.
That may not have been last year. That might have been the year before. But I think engineers love it because it's fiction that's just laid in the reality of science, lots of physics and botany and space travel. I think if you want to go beyond that, a book that I highly recommend to everyone and get it in print and get the illustrated edition on top of it is Bill Bryson's A Short History of Nearly Everything. It's not a book about it's not a book it's not a science book. It's a book about the stories behind scientific discoveries, and it is fascinating. Fascinating, the human element, because it exposes the human element in these scientific discoveries, and from everything from how do we know what the core of the Earth is to how do we I'm struggling for my words here. We probably want to run edit that,
No
but
worries.
highly recommend.
That's half the fun is watching people trip over it. No, but agreed
Yeah,
that that's.
I grasp for topics to share in the book. just go to Amazon and read the review. If that book doesn't have 4.8 stars, I would be surprised.
Nice.
And
so
it's
Vaughn,
a big talk.
But, you know, again, thank you very much for coming on today. It's great to chat. I always enjoy getting an opportunity to talk. And where do folks find you online? How do they connect to you if they'd like to?
My personal phone number is. so look, I'm on the Twitters much more in read mode than share mode of late, but that's at vstewed. V-S-T-E-W-E-D. I've dusted off the blog. I took about a year hiatus to kind of get some of my thoughts in order, which were very in line with kind of what we talked about here, which is, you know, what do you want to talk about, right? Versus, you know, just, you know, kind of getting in on the run-of-the-mill messaging. And so my blog is at vaughnstewart.com, which historically has been, you know, virtualstorageguy.com and had some other spin-offs after joining Pure, but we settled on vaughnstewart.com once that domain popped. So hit up over there. I've committed to my president to start sharing some thoughts on industry as well as some details around our products. So expect to see more there now.
Very cool. And are there any other events that you're going to be at sort of in the coming weeks and months that people can come and see at as well?
Yeah, so some great things are coming up real soon in April in Austin. If you're going to be at the VMware UserCon or the VMUG UserCon, Pure Storage will be there. Rawlinson Rivera from the CTO office at VMware. Rawlinson and I are going to be doing a joint keynote talking about technology trends and futures. We were making a point to trying to pivot away from product and actually kind of give some perspective on where we think the industry is going and some technologies that maybe some customers should start to look at now. So that's in August. I think that's April 7th, April 2016, as well as I think I just got volunteered to attend the OpenStack Summit again in Austin, Texas, and again I believe in April, but I think it's around the third week or so, if memory serves me correct. My apologies to the OpenStack Summit folks for not knowing the dates off the top of my head.
No worries, you're in luck. I've got that one committed to memory. It is the tail end week of the month there. It's the last week of April, right before Interop and EMC World. So I'll be there as well. And make sure you bring your running shoes because we do daily runs. So we do a 5K or 3 mile for my American friends run every morning. So I expect to hopefully see you out on the roadway a little bit with me.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I've gotten creaky knees and dialed it down, but I will bring the shoes and see if we can make it. I'm doing more riding lately than running, but absolutely. And I think after April, you know, my work keeps me on the road, pretty busy, primarily focused in the Americas, because that's the scope of my geo at this point in time. But you know, look. Ping me on the Twitters, you know, if we need to support something or come visit you as a customer, you know how to reach me and we'll go from there.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much, Vaughn. Thanks everybody for listening. This is always great. You know, I love more and more opportunities to bring such a great set of presenters to the audience. And thank you to everybody in the who's subscribing and who's listening in and sharing. So again, if you want to follow us, we're at GC On Demand on Twitter. Of course, I'm at Disco Posse. You can find the podcast at gcondemand.io, which will give you the list of shows, presenters, and topics and all the show notes from each episode. You can subscribe through iTunes and through Stitcher. Links are there. So make sure you let us know, you know, if there's stuff you want to hear, stuff you like, stuff you don't like, whatever it is, we'd love to hear back. So feel free to reach out on Twitter, drop me an email, go to the Green Circle community. You can find that at greencircle.vmturbo.com. Thanks again, everybody. And thanks very much, Vaughn. And I'll see you at the summit at the very least.
That sounds great. We will get together and give my best to the family.
Will do. Thanks.